If you've listened to the show for any length of time, you know that I'm a big fan of connecting with locals when you're traveling someplace. If you're just going to be inside the tour bus, then you might as well stay home. The best parts of travel for me are when you get out into the marketplace or into the cafe where you meet the locals and have a chance to interact. If you're also looking to experience this, then check out Explore Worldwide, whose local tour leaders will get you off the beaten track and into the heart of the adventure, helping you get past being a tourist, experiencing local culture, and finding places you would not find by yourself. And isn't that what travel is all about? If you're thinking about your next adventure, head to exploreworldwide.com to find out more.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 141. Today, the Amateur Traveler goes to Madagascar. Learn about lemurs and vanilla and beautiful beaches in this beautiful destination that is, for many of us, literally at the other end of the world. Today in the Amateur Traveler. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Before we get into the interview, I have just a little news for you today, not a lot. The regular news is pretty much the same in travel these days. Prices are going up. I did have one story that I wrote that I'd be interested in your feedback on. That's on Tribinator.com, and it's the pluses and minuses of group travel or packaged tours. I've already gotten some feedback from people who like or don't like packaged tours, and I'd be interested in your feedback as well. I'll put a link to that in the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome to the show Marilyn, who's coming to us from Tucson to talk to us about Madagascar. Marilyn, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Chris. Nice to be here.
Marilyn is actually a good friend of mine. We've traveled with Marilyn before, and this was not your first trip to Madagascar. Tell us a little bit about your history with that faraway country.
I grew up on the island of Madagascar. My parents went there as missionaries in 1946 on a freighter that was originally used for transporting soldiers during the war. Our family was there off and on between 1946 and 1966 when we came back to the States, to Southern California. So I grew up there. I finished seventh grade in boarding school on the southern tip of the island, and my father had a number of different jobs, the last one being to start the radio Voice of the Gospel, which was a twice-a-day radio program beamed from the radio towers in Addis Ababa. After that, we came back to the States, and then I had the pleasure of returning when I finished Cal Lutheran, got my bachelor's degree and a teaching credential, and went back as a volunteer for a year back to the boarding school where I grew up, and that was in 1976 for a year, and then I had a chance to go back and visit. So, yeah.
And then I know you've been wanting to do this trip for some time and to take your husband Jim along also. And in fact, I've been working in the travel industry with this trip in mind for a number of years. So I really am excited to have you on and to hear more about this. We talk about faraway country. I remember as a kid putting a finger on the globe and putting a finger on the far side of the planet to see if it really was China. And it wasn't. The nearest country was Madagascar to the opposite side of the globe to where I grew up. We understand how you got connected to there. It was not of any choice of your own. It was your parents. But what's your first impression that people will have if they go to Madagascar? Jim's, for instance, he went there for the first time. What is Madagascar like? Can you paint us a picture?
when we just recently went back in February, Jim, of course, had heard about Madagascar, studied it in college and all that, and we actually stayed in the capital city, which is the Tananarive, and the capital city is very densely populated. Madagascar is a fourth world country, so the people are very poor. The thing that I've read about and heard people who are not necessarily connected to the church but are going for other reasons, adventure, travel, or such, is when they come to Madagascar, everywhere they go, and these are people who travel a lot, they say that the people there are some of the most gracious and hospitable people that they've ever met in the world, with big smiles and welcome and just very gracious, ready to help and ready to welcome them and make their stay just the best that it can be. So that's the first thing I would say. And of course, the fact that 80% of the plants and animals that are found on the island of Madagascar are only found there. And so for adventure travels, for folks who are traveling to study plants and animals or the near extinction of plants and animals on the globe, it's a very unique place to go in that regard. And of course, on my own personal thought about Madagascar, it has the most beautiful beaches in the world.
Okay.
For me, that's a high priority.
Marilyn and I actually shared a Madagascar moment on the north shore of Kauai. I've never been with somebody before and had them be homesick for a different place, but I know you were saying that the north shore of Kauai reminded you so much of Madagascar. So we're talking about a very lush, tropical, and also rugged terrain from the picture that I was seeing.
Right, and that would reference my boarding school day in the southern part of the island near a place called Tulugnaro. It used to be called Fort Dauphin, and the beaches on the peninsula surrounding Fort Dauphin are really very beautiful and up the coast a ways. Still, there remain a number of French-influenced resorts and places around the island. But yeah, that beach that we were at in Kauai, when the trees and the chickens on the beach and the beautiful, pristine beach with the ability to go out snorkeling and just walk off the beach, it actually stopped me in my tracks. It reminded me so much of that particular part of Madagascar. But the first place my parents were actually is very much like the train here in Tucson. It was about 2 hours north of the southern tip, the Tulugnaro city that I'm referring to, the port city in southern Madagascar. They stayed in a place called Ambuvumbe. And when my mom first came to Tucson, the first thing she said getting out of the airplane and driving to our home was, "This reminds me of Ambuvumbe." And so the differences in terrain on the island, which is the fourth largest island in the world, about the size of Texas in its land mass, very different terrain in different parts of the island, very, very lush, tropical, gorgeous beaches to extreme desert to spiny, rocky landscape to in the highlands where we last lived as a family. There was a volcanic lake. We had mountains with pine trees and snow in the winter, which was, of course, in July and August when we had vacation. So the terrain and the landscape and even the people and the tribes are very different, even in that small island. Their homes, their style of homes, the crops that are grown and things like that.
So you obviously were going to reconnect in a very personal way. If somebody else is going to Madagascar, what would you recommend they see if they had, say, a week or 2 weeks?
Well, the thing that I would recommend is flying into the capital city in Tananarive, and you can get there from a nonstop flight from Paris to Tananarive. It's about 10 hours and 40 minutes, which is what we just did. Originally, I think it took us about 2 days to get there through Europe and Africa and to try to get to Madagascar, but it's actually quite simple to get there now from the States on Air France or Air Madagascar. But coming into the capital city, you want a little bit of time to get the culture and go shopping and go out to some of the local restaurants. And if you're a churchgoer, you want to go to church on a Sunday morning because the singing on the harmonies that the Malagasy have in the freedom of worship is so beautiful. And even when people see in our videos, they're brought to tears because it's so beautiful. But there used to be a train, and we have to check on the land connection on here, but there's a place northeast of Tananarive called Nosy Be and Ile Sainte-Marie, which are absolutely glorious places resort areas for staying for a few days on a beach. And if you like scuba diving or snorkeling or just simply relaxing, there are a number of resorts up there that are just really, I would definitely recommend. You would also want to take a train or a plane down to the southern part of Madagascar, down to Tulunaro. The connection to the famous Barenti Reserve is, it's about an hour north of Fort Dauphin once you get in there. And there are lots of connections, and there's a beautiful lodge there to stay, the Barenti Lodge, and it's where all the lemurs are filmed and cared for. It's just an absolute world-class place to stop. Lemurs, of course, are only found in Madagascar, and Barenti is the place to go. Definitely want to go there. There's also a city on the west side of Madagascar called Toliara, and you can fly up there. It's a lovely, another port city with the great places to shop and walk and, again, enjoy the beaches. If you're a beach hound, my favorite beach is called Lebanon Beach, and there is a hotel right on Lebanon Beach, which I still have yet to take my family to, but it's right outside of Tulunaro. You can walk there, take a taxi cab. It's the most beautiful, protected half-moon beach with a reef out, so it's protected from any creatures out there. It's the beach, of course, where we went when we were children, but still today it's known for one of the most beautiful beaches in the world, actually.
On your last trip, you hadn't been to Madagascar for a while. Any surprises?
Yeah. You know, the surprises for me in the capital city of Tananarive, I never lived in Tananarive. We always went through there because that's where the flights out to Africa or Europe or the States were.
Mm-hmm.
The number, the sheer population increase in the city and the density of population was staggering to me. And the amount of little tiny taxis that were trying to make their way with exorbitant gas prices and horrible fumes. I'm not painting a very good picture of walking around the city, but the sheer number of people and taxi cabs and the busyness of that city absolutely struck me. But when we got to our place where we stayed and we went to visit friends and we met people from the Peace Corps and from the embassy and just had great stories of the Peace Corps effort going on in the city and had a chance to go out to some really, really great restaurants that were $5, $6 for an incredible French meal, that to me was the level of restaurants that were offered at such great localities, also for food. I mean, it was just really, really fantastic.
As we talk about food, your love for beaches and my love for food are fairly similar, I think. Obviously, yeah. French influence, former French colony.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
If you go to Madagascar, don't forget to try the...
Don't forget to try the Malagasy stew called Hena Ritra, and it's H-E-N-A and R-I-T-A, the second word. And it's a stew made with beef and pork and chicken and with some vegetables and tomatoes and garlic served on a bed of red rice. You want the red rice. There's nothing better than red rice from Madagascar. And you want to have something in your dessert with Madagascar vanilla. And there are lots of things to choose from. Madagascar vanilla is some of the best in the world. It's used by many famous companies, including Coca-Cola. It's phenomenally good, and you have to try a French dessert, or better yet, buy some vanilla from one of the street vendors in Tananarive or any city that you go to. You can take 4 kilos of vanilla back to the States with you, which is a lot of vanilla beans, and you bring it home, and you slice them down the middle and put them in French brandy, vodka, or even cheap vanilla extract, and you put them in there and let it sit for 3 months, you have the best vanilla around. I, of course, came home with almost 4 kilos. So I'm still giving it away. By the way, Chris, would you like some?
Sure.
One of my friends who was out there, he bought as much as he could, and he went back to New York City, and he paid for his whole trip by the sale of that vanilla to the New York City chef.
Oh, my goodness.
So, yeah, you want to have the Malagasy stew. You want to have the red rice. And depending on the season, any tropical fruit that's in season, you want to go for, and the lobster or langostino if you're on a coastal area.
Now, you mentioned Malagasy, which mm-hmm. would be the local language, which is the mm-hmm. national language?
Exactly.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I only know one phrase in Malagasy, which would be, let's see if I can get it right, Sidishu ni Mangataka.
Oh, I am so proud of you. Oh, my goodness. That's been my main phrase since we started our project here, too, in Tucson, is it never hurts to ask. And if you ask people to come and help along and make a difference in the lives of our friends over there, you got to ask the question. I'm so proud of you, Chris.
Obviously, I learned this from Marilyn here. It never hurts to ask in Malagasy. Is that something that tells us something about the culture?
You know, I think the thing about it is when you're over there and you're talking with them, of course, there are places where if you're shopping, they want you to bargain a little bit. You want to give your price and talk it through. But they love conversation. Of course, out in the villages, unless you know Malagasy, you're not going to be able to ask them very many questions to start a conversation. But they love to talk. They love to share. Anything you want to ask, they're gracious and just so hospitable. But as far as their culture goes, I would say they're a little more reserved. As okay. far as to ask us, might be in their own families, that phrase might come to life a little bit more, but they're very honorable and gracious and would never, ever want to put you on the spot by asking something that would put you in an uncomfortable position. Mm-hmm. And I will say one more thing about when you're coming into the capital city, what you never want to miss, going to the marketplaces where the women are selling embroideries, because okay. the embroideries in Madagascar are known for looking the same on the front and on the back. You can't tell which is the top and the bottom.
Oh, wow.
And the beautiful colors that come to life from the flowers and the plants and the people themselves, it telling the stories in the embroideries are just really quite beautiful. And being that the poinsettia is the national flower of Madagascar, you can find many beautiful tablecloths and clothing and small doilies and all kinds of things with the beautiful poinsettia on it. And that would be also something that would be a treasure.
The best day you've ever had in Madagascar?
The best day I had in our recent trip, here's the storyline of this recent trip. When my father's first place he worked was in Ambouvembe, it was a small country parish, and he built a church with his Malagasy colleagues. And one of the young boys that was in the church came to church with his grandmother, and his name was Perry Rasulun Drabe. And he came to church, eventually became a pastor in the Lutheran church in Madagascar. And then my husband, who is a pastor here in Northeast Tucson, went to seminary in St. Paul, Minnesota. Pastor Perry became his teacher in seminary.
Oh, funny.
And so when we came back to Madagascar this last trip, it was to visit Pastor Perry's church in Tananarive with a membership of about 10,000 people.
Oh.
When I first met him on the stairs of the mission compound, I hadn't seen him for 20 years in seminary. The first thing he looked at me, he got this big grin on his face, a kiss on one cheek and a kiss on the other cheek, which is typical Malagasy, and he looks at me and he goes, "Welcome home." It was pretty special.
And so, on the flip side, one warning you would give about going to Madagascar?
Be very careful if you're walking in places that even has been rainy for a while, the water in Madagascar. If you go into the outlying, we were mainly in the central area, but the malaria and the dysentery and the problems that can come from dirty water, wherever you go, beware. Never drink anything other than bottled water, and make sure the bottled water you're drinking is truly sealed. Water is the big thing, in my opinion. And have a mosquito net on your bed.
So you were taking, I assume, a malaria prophylactic then, Larium or something like that with you? Okay.
Exactly. Yeah, we took Malarone, I think it's called.
Malarone, sure. Mm-hmm.
And we only took that and nothing else because we went straight from Paris to Tananarive. We didn't go through Africa, so we didn't need any other shots or anything else. And we weren't going to the coast. We were just staying in inland, so that's all we had to take.
Okay.
Yeah.
I usually ask people what they wish they had known. I don't know if you have an answer for that because you obviously knew more about this country than most people going there.
The one thing that happened that I found out, the entry visa went from $17 on December 31st to $86 cash U.S. dollars when you arrive in the capital city in the airport. So that was one thing I didn't realize, but actually found out just before we left. So we had the money we needed to get into the country when we landed. So that was helpful.
Okay. Any resources you used to help plan this trip?
We had some personal connections over there in the capital city for lodging and all the programming and things, but I do have a very good friend who is part of a tour company, travel company called Travel Beyond, and it's a travel agency out of the Twin Cities. And if you're interested in finding out about adventure tours or any personal travel to Africa and Madagascar, their website, travelbeyond.com, is just a fantastic one. And my friend's name is Suzanne Zapolsky, and she specializes in Madagascar and Africa. I actually grew up with her in boarding school, and so she also has a real
a depth of knowledge about the island. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How many tourists does Madagascar get? It's so far away from so many places.
Well, from what I understand from Suzanne and from others, the ecotourism has grown considerably over there.
That makes sense.
And also, just this week, there was a special on Good Morning America about the Bronx Zoo new program that they've placed. They just opened up this week. And I think there's a lot more awareness of what's happened with the land in Madagascar and the Wildlife Association. And Duke University also has a major Madagascar program. So we were watching on the ESPN, I think it was last year, where they had one of those extreme sport events over there that people came from all over the world to do the biking and the swimming and running. Triathlon event over there, some extreme sport thing. But I believe the tourism has grown. The country seems fairly stable at this point as far as the
political situation
is concerned. And I think just because in our information age, it's just become a lot more well-known. And there's a lot of websites. There's one website also called wildmadagascar.org that is a really fun one with some absolutely stunning photographs of the people and the island itself and the variety. It's a really fun one to take a look at. Yeah, now that you can get there, I mean, we left Tucson one morning and got into Paris and got in there the next night into Tananarive.
One last moment that you would picture that was a perfect Madagascar moment that really, for you, kind of sums up the country.
Sums up the country. I would be sitting on Lebanon Beach.
I knew it would be a beach.
I would be at the beach. I would be at Lebanon Beach, and I would be sitting there for most of the afternoon, just swimming and relaxing. And then one of the lobster fishermen would be coming off of his outrigger canoe, which we called Lacanas, and he would have over his shoulder a basket of fresh lobster, and he would sell them to us for almost nothing. And we would boil them up and grill them and have some French bread and have a little conversation with him and enjoy the sunset.
Any last words of advice for somebody who's thinking about going to Madagascar?
I would definitely think about taking a trip to Madagascar. I think you will be so amazed and surprised at not only the people, but the diversity in the landscape and the kinds of treasures that you can find in the handiwork and the spices, and especially taking home some vanilla, just some beautiful photographs of the people themselves, and help them out in not only their economy that's really struggling, but be truly blessed by the experience of being with the people of Madagascar. I forgot to tell you about the music. Really,
you mentioned the church music.
Oh, but the traditional Malagasy music is really, really amazing with the drums and the guitars and the special tubes that they make with the strings around that are just absolutely beautiful. It's very unique instruments there, too.
Marilyn, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing some of your love for this place.
Well, thank you so much. It's a great honor to be with you on this program, and you just have such a fantastic website and program, Chris, and I also want to congratulate you on all the travel program that you do for the rest of us and all the tips you give, and it's been an honor.
You are most welcome. Thanks again.
Mishautra is the Malagasy. Mishautra. My grandma came over from Norway. The way she said it was me, like she pointed herself, me, and then shout, like put her hands by her mouth, and then ra, raised her left hand in the air. Mishautra. Mishautra means thank you.
I have two internet resources for you today, or actually one resource and one tip that I want to remind people of that I learned recently. The first one is laterooms.com, and that's a site that you can use to find hotel rooms for a stay that is very close to now, like this weekend. And it was pointed out to us by one of the people that we stayed with in London, and it is probably more European-centric than the U.S., although they do have a number of hotel rooms I see available this weekend for San Francisco. So that's something you might check out. And the second one is to tip. I was recently booking a trip for the podcast convention or podcast and new media expo that I'm going to in August in Las Vegas. And one thing that I found is when you are doing something like that where you're staying in one place, and this would also work if you were going overseas potentially, is think about your traditional travel sites like Expedia, Travelocity, and Orbitz, who can bundle both the airfare and the hotel. So the podcast expo had a hotel rate at the Hilton of $115 a night that they had negotiated. I was able to bundle 3 nights plus the airfare to Las Vegas from San Jose, and basically ended up that the airfare was $15 on top of what I would have paid at the hotel if I had reserved through the expo. So that's some advice that I'm giving people, especially more recently. If you are booking a trip and you're trying to save money, and goodness knows with the price of travel right now, you probably are. If you're just going to one place, think about bundling your airfare and your hotel. I hope that helps. Keith sent me an email that had a correction to a show we did earlier in the year on Tunisia that I seem to have forgotten to play in a timely fashion. Sorry, Keith. Keith was listening to the show about Tunisia. He said he was going to visit in June and found the show helpful, but I would like to mention a small correction regarding visas. They are not required by citizens of the U.S., the EU, the U.K., or Canada. Australians and South Africans who do require a visa can obtain it, like the podcast says on entry. However, according to the Tunisia Tourist Office in London, foreign currency is accepted. I did ask. My wife has an Australian passport. You can, if you need it, get visa in advance, but it's a rather prolix and tedious performance. And I'll put the link in that Keith sent me for the visa information. I have gotten particularly good feedback on the show we did recently on Iran. It really was one of my favorites also. Sorry, on Iran. And if you haven't had a chance to listen to that show yet, you might want to check that one out. And if you do listen to a show and you like it, don't feel embarrassed to go to stumbleupon.com or digdigg.com and mark that show as something that other people would enjoy. It drives additional traffic to that particular episode. And so feel free to do that. You won't embarrass me at all. Remember, we do have a sponsor who is Budget Rental Car. So if you check out amateurtraveler.com/sponsor, you can get a code that'll get you 10% off your next car rental or $30 off a weekly rental. With that, we'll bring this episode of The Amateur Traveler to a close. Feel free to send me an email to host@amateurtraveler.com or leave a comment on this show at amateurtraveler.com. And as always, thanks so much for listening. One more cathedral, I got to sit in one more.